The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Are you a clinic owner searching for something new this year? Do you have unhappy clients with a mystery illness the doctors can't treat? Then it's time to try out our latest professional systems. My name is Kevin Davis. With our bioresonance system, we start with an automated full body scan. It's simply the quickest way to shine a light on what's going on inside, with treatments to strengthen, meridian stimulation, pathogen discovery, session guides, lifetime support, and a lot more. For the latest health tech at the best price, visit biohealthtech.co.uk today.
Hello, welcome to the YesterLife show here on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, presenter for the show and founder of the UK charity YesterLife that helps bring the benefits of integrative medicine to people with cancer. Each week, I speak to people working in the field of integrative medicine, be they doctors, oncologists, practitioners, researchers, or activists. And this week, I'm excited to be able to speak about some research trials that would have been unthinkable just a few short years ago. The University of Iowa is one of several university research departments in the US that's been running trials of vitamin C and cancer in recent years. And Dr. Joseph Cullen has played a leading role in driving the research forward. In response to the recent press announcement of some extremely promising results for late-stage aggressive cancers, I arranged to call Dr. Cullen in Iowa, USA, which is west of Chicago, and where it's currently minus 20 degrees, I'm told. Hi, Dr. Cullen. Thanks so much for coming on the YesterLife show to tell us about your exciting trials of vitamin C in cancer.
Great. Hello to you, and I'd be happy to answer all your questions.
Okay, well, in the research world, vitamin C has long been a bit of a Cinderella. It's been long discredited and derided and cast aside as another disproven alternative medicine fad. But what made you and your team want to take another look?
Well, it goes back. You're exactly right. So in the late 70s, there was actually a Scottish surgeon, Ewan McGregor, who did some studies, minus Pauling, and they gave very high doses of vitamin C to patients, and they showed some effect because they had terminal cancer, and they showed that it actually lengthened their overall survival. Mm-hmm. So there was two randomized trials at the Mayo Clinic in the early 80s by Dr. Charles Mortel, and this was looking at a variety of cancers, and both trials showed no effect of vitamin C. But the problem was they were giving it orally, and McGregor had given some IV and some orally.
Right.
So then, fast forward about 10 years after that, Mark Levine at the NIH here in America was looking at, what nutritional needs were for vitamin C. And with some really nice studies, he showed that when you give it orally, you achieve micromolar doses in your blood, and it's a great way of limiting how much vitamin C you have in your blood. And if you eat too much, like if you ate 20 oranges, you'd still only get about 150 micromolar in your blood because the body would excrete it through the urine when you get that certain level.
Mm-hmm.
But then what he showed was that if you give it IV, and you give large doses, patients tolerated it, and you got millimolar doses. And then he's actually an endocrinologist, and he did some studies with some cancer cells, and he showed that, at these very high doses, and if you put them on the cancer cells for a very short period of time, it killed the cancer cells.
Right.
So he was collaborating with a colleague of mine here at the University of Iowa, Gary Bittner, and he came and gave a talk, and our lab had been doing numerous studies on pancreatic cancer. Our lab is devoted to pancreatic cancer. It has been for the last 15, 20 years.
All right.
And we were looking at different agents, and so Gary wanted to invite Mark Levine here to meet me, and so we met, and I said, we should try this. We should give this a try in our cancer cells. And we did, and I remember the first experiments, my research tech said, hey, all the cells are dead. And I said, well, we must have screwed up.
Right.
Because that never, nothing we tried ever, you know, there's always some left. So we did it again, and they were all dead.
So this was with vitamin C?
With high-dose vitamin C.
Right. Yep. Hmm.
And so then we tried it in some mice, and it worked really well. So then we tried it, we thought, well, that's a great, you know, we need to try this in patients. We need to do a phase one trial. So we did it in stage four pancreatic cancer patients, and they tolerated it very well, and we increased their, just in a small study, we increased their overall survival from a historical average of 6 months up to 13 months.
Which is major, isn't it? I mean,
we just added vitamin C to the standard of care. In fact, we still have one patient who's still alive.
Okay. This. So that's how many, how long's that?
She's over 5 years.
Blimey, okay.
Now she's dying of breast cancer, so.
Oh, no.
Terrible.
Yeah, that is terrible, having survived pancreatic. Okay, well, look, those are amazing results. So this trial then, how many people were involved? Can you tell us a bit more about the trial as a whole?
Sure. So the stage four pancreatic cancer, where we combine the vitamin C with just standard of care chemotherapy. In our second trial that we just published in December of 2018, mm-hmm. we added the vitamin C when they were getting radiation for pancreatic cancer, which was kind of a nice idea. So they're sitting there getting irradiated, and we're infusing vitamin C at the same time. And we did it every day for 6 weeks. And we just published those studies, and in those patients, we increased the overall survival from 11 months to about 22 months. Mm. And we have now three long-term survivors from that, where the tumor shrank enough that the surgeon could cut it out. And what was remarkable was in two of the cases, the pathology came back, no viable tumor cells.
Right.
And that's really unheard of in pancreatic cancer. That's
amazing.
Really unheard of.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So just to be clear then, so they're getting radiotherapy. What sort of radiotherapy was it? How is it administered? Is it regular radiotherapy or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just regular standard 50 gray of radiation given over a 6 week time.
Right. And these patients, they would have received just radiotherapy or both radiotherapy and chemotherapy?
They would have received both radiotherapy and chemotherapy. And in our trial, they got both too.
Right.
You can't do a trial unless without adding the standard of care.
No, sure. So the standard of care includes both. Okay.
Yeah. So now we've opened up, we've done a trial on glioblastoma, phase one on glioblastoma. That's going to be published here soon. We've opened up phase two trials in lung cancer and glioblastoma, and we've got phase two trial going on in pancreatic cancer, and we're going to open up a phase two trial in pancreatic cancer where radiation and vitamin C.
Amazing. So you got your foot on the gas, as they say.
Yeah, yes, we do.
Yeah, that's very amazing. Well, look, I mean, those kind of doubling of life expectancy figures are the kind of thing that a drug company would die for with pancreatic cancer, aren't they? I mean, it's astonishingly good mm-hmm. results.
Yes. Mm. And the good thing is, the problem with vitamin C, especially the IV preparation, is the patent is gone on it, and the drug companies don't make a lot of money on this. This is a very inexpensive therapy. Very inexpensive.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, the great news in a way, though, is that it's not in itself a threat because nobody's touting it about as a cure on its own, necessarily. They're looking at it in combination with other treatments. So it's only making patients' prospects better.
Right, right. Yeah, we're not saying this is the magic bullet. No, not at all.
No, right. Okay, so could we talk a little bit about its mechanism of action now? So taking along as many of our non-scientist listeners as possible, and that includes me, Can you explain what vitamin C does and how it has an anti-cancer effect?
It's very simple, actually. It has a very simple mechanism. So everybody thinks of vitamin C as an antioxidant, right?
Yeah.
And at oral doses, it is. It's a tremendous antioxidant. But when we give it IV and we give it at huge doses that we do, like, so for example, if you bought vitamin C at your local drugstore or grocery store, you take about 250 milligrams.
Right.
And we give up to 100 grams.
Right. So a completely different order.
Yeah. So when we do it at those doses, it becomes a prooxidant. And what it does is it forms hydrogen peroxide in and around the tumors, and that's what kills the cells, the hydrogen peroxide.
Right. Okay, and so could you just explain the difference between an antioxidant and a prooxidant then?
Okay, so an antioxidant, the public, an antioxidant scavenges or kind of mops up these free radicals or reactive oxygen species that can be detrimental.
Right.
And our body makes them all the time, and so our body is full of antioxidants, but, you know, sometimes we need more, and vitamin C is a perfect antioxidant when given oral. Now, a prooxidant is something that actually produces these reactive oxygen species, like hydrogen peroxide.
Okay.
And that's what kills the tumor cells.
Right. Okay. But you say it kills tumor cells. What does it do to normal cells?
Well, that's the beauty of this. So in our publication we just had, and we've had another publication, it looks like, well, it in normal cells it doesn't do anything. They don't behave the same as the cancer cells. They don't die like the cancer cells. So the phenomenal thing about this is it looks like in normal cells that high-dose vitamin C reverses the bad effects of chemo and radiation therapy on normal cells.
Wow.
So for example, for pancreatic cancer, when you radiate the pancreas, the duodenum is right there and the intestines are right there. And the intestines are very sensitive to radiation. I mean, that's why you can't give radiation to a lot of intra-abdominal tumors. They're just the gut is too sensitive to it.
Right.
But our studies have shown that actually vitamin C reverses some of that damage to the intestine.
Right.
Not completely, but it does reverse it significantly, but not completely.
Well, that is pretty amazing, because what you're saying then is that not only is it kind of the holy grail of cancer treatment in as much as it only damages cancer cells, which is what everybody's always trying to do, of course, but also it actually helps ameliorate damage from the treatment they might be having at the same time. That's an amazing combination, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really cool. Like we did, so we looked at intestine, we've looked at hair loss.
Yes.
And it reverses the hair loss from radiation.
Really?
Yeah. It's amazing. In mice, you know, not patients yet.
Okay.
And in our trials, not only that, but in our trials, we've gotten the suggestion that patients just do better with vitamin C. They tolerate the radiation better. They tolerate the chemotherapy. The chemotherapy doesn't have to be decreased because the patients aren't tolerating it. They seem to just better tolerate the whole pretty toxic therapies.
Hmm. Well, that's very amazing and fantastic news for a lot of patients, I think. Okay. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the scientific method, if you like. It may seem like a little bit of a side alley, but it's had a very direct impact on the progress of vitamin C as a treatment. So it was proposed as a cancer treatment back in the 1970s, as you said, and now almost 50 years later you've been able to show that they were actually right, yeah, and it's got enormous potential to help people with cancer. So due to the perseverance of some courageous practitioners, some researchers and everybody, the whole thing's just about kept going. And quite a few people along the way have benefited from this original discovery, but the vast majority of people, they haven't. It hasn't been on the agenda, has it? This very cheap, easy to administer, safe, non-toxic treatment that helps in more ways than one, it's just not been available. So I'm kind of interested to hear what you think about the traditional scientific method, which in which, I mean, scientists generally say it's a great thing. Someone proposes something and then everybody else tries to knock it down. And the amount of vigor with which that's pursued is proportional to the amount of potential disruption it causes to the status quo, I'd say. But to me, this kind of adversarial system seems about as productive as the adversarial politics we're suffering from at the moment. You know, bit of a mess over here in the UK, as you probably know.
Hey, it's bad over there. It's even worse over here. So.
I know. Anyway, it's good ideas and good people get utterly destroyed in the process, and I think the truth has a tough time surfacing. So the fact it's taken half a century for vitamin C to get validated is actually quite good game by the standards of many medical discoveries. You know, there have been some that have taken a century or more. So I'm really interested, you know, the price paid in human suffering. Does it justify carrying on with the current black, white, right, wrong, proven quackery model? Isn't it long past time to sort of ditch all this confrontation for collaboration and you know, to really get together for the sake of all of our health?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. So I think our group at Iowa is doing it the right way. And that fact we have basic science in cells and in mice, and we have a mechanism, and we're doing the trials the way they're supposed to be done.
Okay.
And we don't know. I mean, we still haven't done, you know, we haven't completed our phase 2 trials. We haven't done any phase 3 trials where the patients are randomized. So we don't quite know if it's going to be helpful in the long run. We're really encouraged by this. The people who fund our studies from the NIH are encouraged by it because they see our science, they see the mechanism. The problem is that it has this bad history.
It does.
So, you know, like early 80s, you know, the Mayo Clinic, very esteemed place. I trained there for a little bit. They said, you know, it doesn't work. That is kind of oversaw a lot of it.
Unfortunately, that kind of, you know, the job that the Mayo Clinic did on it, doing a very poor trial, you know, they've got a lot of authority and they have a lot of responsibility for the outcomes for patients. You know, this is what it's all about in the end of the day. It's saving lives is what it's about, not about, you know, well, is it a drug or is it a vitamin? So it's, in a way, there's a huge amount of damage being done to patients by making this information stall and become not available for 50 years.
Yeah. Well, part of the problem is, you know, the studies done at Mayo, they just didn't know the mechanism of action. They didn't realize that actually if you give it intravenously, you're going to have a totally different effect than if you give it orally.
Mm.
And they just didn't know that, you know.
Right. Anyway, it's a tricky thing, and yeah, it's got this reputation, that's right, of being quackery, when it isn't, in fact, and as you're finding out, you know, it's actually got huge potential. So I feel that this kind of black and whiteness of the scientific method, things are being proven or they're quackery, I was looking up personality types, and I was thinking to myself, well, if the scientific method were a person, they'd be described as having a personality disorder. There's a thing called splitting, which is called black and white thinking or all or nothing thinking. You know, it's an inability to deal with grey situations where it's uncertain. But, you know, there's some evidence. But that grey area is where all the potential is, of course. And individuals who are sick, of course, they want to know things like, well, you know, if it's helped some people they know and it's safe and it's not very expensive, well, that makes it interesting. That's good enough for them, isn't it? But that's not good enough for the scientific community, which in one way is good because they're requiring some rigor. But in another way, this inability for things to just be, well, you know, slightly proven, it's just not there, really. It seems like they have to be pushed in one direction or the other.
Right. Yeah, and yeah, I totally agree with you.
Anyway, it does mean there's a lot of very uncomplimentary stuff is thrown around. I mean, we've had our share, Yes to Life. We have a nice headline in the Daily Mail national paper, Anger as Charity Promotes Quack Vitamin C Cancer Therapy. That sort of thing. We've had it because we've helped people to get vitamin C for years. And it's got this label of quack medicine, and quite a lot of other people jump on the bandwagon as soon as that becomes a label. You know, there are people who make a living out of basically being defenders of the public, keeping them safe from quack doctors. And there are people making money on which might be at risk from a cheap treatment coming along, and all that kind of thing. And so something that's got huge potential to help people with cancer is literally just hounded. I was talking to Ralph Moss last week, and he was appalled at the aggressive and disrespectful way the British establishment treated Linus Pauling, the only double Nobel laureate ever, back in the 70s or 80s, over the vitamin C issue. He was just torn to shreds about it. It was very bad.
Yeah.
Mm.
I always tell people that the oncologist who did the studies at Mayo, Charles Martel?
Yes,
he lived till he was in his, I think, early 60s. He died fairly young.
Yeah,
but Linus Pauling lived till he was 90s.
He did. That's so, okay. There's a lesson in that, you think?
Yeah, there might be something there. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, it's an interesting thing with evidence because it's vitamin C has worked all along in the way that you're seeing. As far we don't know how far it works, but it does something for sure.
Yeah,
and
it does.
And that has not changed in the least because there's some evidence to say it does. So from the point of view of people with cancer, it's no better or worse than it ever was. But as from the point of view of getting it as a treatment, things certainly change when you get some evidence. So it's very important, the evidence, in one way, but in another way it's not. It doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, to some people, some of my colleagues, even in other disciplines, they still don't believe it. No matter how much data you can show them and mechanism and results, they still don't believe it. But the thing is, there's numerous studies throughout the states now. There's numerous labs looking at this
Yes.
in different areas, and they're finding the same thing.
I've heard that. Yeah.
So, that's encouraging. I mean, that shows that hey, we're not the only ones seeing this. Same effect.
Well, I think that that your description you've made of your colleagues is a bit of that black and white thinking that I was describing earlier. They're on one side of the black and white argument, and it's jolly hard to move from there right to the other side. If you're hanging around the middle and saying, well, I'm not sure, the evidence is not that good, you can then have your mind change reasonably easily. It's a bad thing, I think, for patients. I think it's a So you've already talked about some other trials that you've got planned there, and I wanted to ask about the grounds for extrapolating any of your findings so far to other cancers. Tell me the commonalities that you think would lead it to be useful in other tumors, other types of cancer.
Yeah, so like I said, we're doing glioblastoma and lung cancer, and there hasn't been any tumors that we've tried where we said, oh, it doesn't work really well.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, but that's not every tumor. We haven't tried every tumor.
No.
But the other thing that I think is really striking is the other thing that we haven't touched on is many oncologists, many legitimate oncologists in the States are afraid to give vitamin C with their chemotherapy because they say, well, vitamin C is an antioxidant,
yes,
and I don't want you to reverse the effects of chemotherapy on the tumor.
So maybe just explain that a little bit. I've come across that before, but maybe not all our listeners have. So could you explain why there might be an idea that vitamin C would actually counteract chemotherapy?
Well, it's wrong. It's a wrong thought.
Okay.
Because, like I said before, what the oncologists are thinking is that vitamin C is acting as an antioxidant, and so it's going to it's going to reverse the effects of the chemotherapy on the tumor, where we have shown in every chemotherapy we've tried with vitamin C, it doesn't reverse any of it, and usually it's adds to the tumor killing, or it synergizes the effects of the chemotherapy on the tumor.
Mm. Amazing. All right, so yeah. That's just a very wrong idea. I mean, there's plenty of people who consult us have been told by their oncologist they don't want them taking any antioxidants near time of their chemotherapy. So that's fair enough in terms of like taking oral doses of vitamin C, for example.
Right.
But this is different.
Yeah, this is different. So every chemotherapy we've tried vitamin C in the lab, all of them have either added to the killing effect on the tumor, or actually not any additive, but they're synergizing with the chemotherapy.
Mm. Amazing.
And radiation therapy too.
Yeah. Okay. So the trials that you've chosen to do, you mentioned glioblastoma and lung cancer. Well, these are along with pancreatic. You seem to have got a policy that you're going for the very worst cancers.
Yes, we are, because if we can see a difference in these, so to me they're a little bit easier to study because the overall survival in these patients is very poor.
Right.
And so if you can see any change, like if you can see an overall survival, you increase the overall survival from 11 months to 22 months, then you're making a difference, right?
Yes.
If it's something like breast cancer where may survive for 5 to 7 years, you're not going to see an effect right away.
Right. But that's not to say this is not a helpful thing to have if you've got breast cancer.
Oh, right. Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting. Okay. So do you want to say a bit more then about... one last question while we're on that. Does this only apply to solid tumors, or would it also apply to, say, blood cancers?
So we have some people here at Iowa who are looking at multiple myeloma, mm-hmm. which is a blood cancer, and they're showing some very positive effects.
Really?
With ascorbate, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well,
that's the only one we've tried. Mm. We haven't tried any leukemias or anything like that.
Mm. Well, they used the term holy grail earlier on about this treatment that not only picks out cancer cells and damages just them, but also... it's good for the healthy cells and supporting them through treatment. And now you said one more thing, which is, as far as you know so far, you don't even care what kind of cancer it is you're dealing with.
Not really. I mean, we've done, just the lab studies show every cancer we tried, it seems to have an effect.
Mm. Well, that's quite astonishing. Okay, so can we just talk a bit more about your plans looking forward then, where you're heading with this? I understand you've now got NCI, National Cancer Institute,
NCI
funding, which, that's the major fund for all research into cancer in the US, yeah?
Yes.
So, I mean, this is astonishing. This is like unthinkable by British standards. I call us backward Britain here. I mean, to think of... central funds coming to research vitamin C is about as unlikely as it can get here at the moment. We're at least 10 years behind you in terms of the general thinking towards integrative medicine, which is what you've been talking about today, as far as I'm concerned, which is using a non-toxic natural substance and using it in synergy with a standard treatment. That's integrative medicine. And, we haven't even started in that direction. So amazing that you've got this type of funding, and quite substantial too, I believe. Is that right?
Right, yeah. We just received what's called a program project grant, or a PO1 grant,
yeah.
From NCI. It's just under $10 million for 5 years.
Ooh,
so.
$10 million. Fantastic. So that, hence you've got lots of plans.
We do, yeah, we do. My project is with pancreatic cancer. The second project is lung cancer, and the third project is glioblastoma, which I mentioned before. And, and we're looking at different aspects of each cancer. Mine looks at metastases.
Okay.
It looks like vitamin C can actually, high dose vitamin C can actually limit the metastatic spread of these tumors. The lung cancer is looking at iron metabolism in the tumor and how vitamin C interacts with the iron. And then the third with glioblastoma is looking at imaging and seeing how we can image these tumors and see if how the vitamin C is working through the imaging.
Mm. Well, right. Okay, so you're actually describing more effects of vitamin C in there over and above what we've already discussed. So you're saying it can act in restricting metastases. What's going on there? How do you think that works?
Well, we're not quite sure yet, but it seems like every step of the metastatic process is inhibited by vitamin C. And it may not be due to just the cells dying. So if dead cells aren't going to metastasize, right?
Right.
But even when the cells are still alive, they can metastasize, and it looks like vitamin C is inhibiting that process. I'm not quite sure why yet. We're still looking at mechanism, but it's pretty interesting, and it's seems kind of remarkable, and that we can see that. So,
Fascinating. So, you just mentioned something about iron there as well. What's significant mm-hmm. about that?
Well, iron interacts when you have a lot of when the vitamin C generates the hydrogen peroxide.
Mm-hmm.
The hydrogen peroxide, this kind of chemistry that when iron is there, the hydrogen peroxide produces a really toxic intermediate called hydroxyl radical.
Mm-hmm.
And this hydroxyl radical is like the worst reactive oxygen species that kills everything.
Okay.
So we're finding that the ascorbate produces a peroxide, which then interacts with the iron in the tumors, and that causes a lot of cancer cell death.
So this is one of the ways in which it's specific to just cancer cells then?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I see. Interesting. And just as a question, okay, if by taking vitamin C you end up with this hydrogen peroxide, what stops people administering hydrogen peroxide directly?
There's a little background in that story. So
okay.
that would be a huge mistake.
Okay.
Because hydrogen peroxide is converted to water and oxygen by catalase, an enzyme called catalase.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you infuse hydrogen peroxide into the blood, my fear is that you will produce a lot of oxygen and you'll get what's called an air embolism.
Mm. Okay.
And so I wouldn't advise doing that.
Yeah.
So a couple years ago I was giving a talk and this person stood up and he was one of these complementary and alternative medicine practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
He infused hydrogen peroxide all the time with my patients. And my jaw dropped. And I said, you know, I really wouldn't do that. I think there's case reports where people have used hydrogen peroxide in open wounds and patients get air embolism because of this conversion from hydrogen peroxide to water and oxygen.
Right.
And then they get an air embolism and people have died because of that. He said, oh, no, it's fine. So I said, well, to the crowd, I said, I really wouldn't advise doing this. I think that's a mistake. And
But so basically, vitamin C is a safe way of administering hydrogen peroxide, then, basically.
That's right, what you're saying. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, that makes sense. Okay, I also wanted to ask one more thing. There's, you've already talked about the way that vitamin C can be used synergistically with regular treatments. Are there other sort of non-standard or non-drug treatments that you know of in which there's it combines usefully? I mean, I was thinking, for example, of like the ketogenic diet has been used for glioblastomas quite a bit. Is there any synergy between the two?
Yeah, so they have a similar mechanism of action. A ketogenic diet increases reactive oxygen species in the tumor. We had a short study on that too.
All right. And
we have combined a vitamin C with some agents that mimic a ketogenic diet, and we see synergism with that.
Mm.
The problem with the ketogenic diet, it's difficult for patients to stay eating that diet.
Yeah, it's quite challenging. Most of these diets are, aren't they? Extreme diets. But I know people who are very good at it, and they've had extraordinary results with very poor prognosis with glioblastoma. So it certainly has an effect if you can do it. But as you say, it's a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else in that way that you know of that combines well?
We're doing some vitamin C with drug Aronofin that was used years ago for rheumatoid arthritis.
Okay.
And it has a similar mechanism of action. We're just doing some really basic studies though, so we really don't have many results to. But in cell culture, it seems to act synergistically with vitamin C.
That's interesting. So this is repurposing a drug basically from a completely different area of medicine.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
exactly right.
There seems to be quite a growth field, doesn't it? Now, for this is something that's been dormant for a very long time. You know, various people have known about quite a range of drugs that have uses in cancer or could do, but it hasn't led to any exploration until recently. But it seems it's taking off now.
I think so too. And the other thing, the other area that you may want to discuss or touch on, is there are some groups in critical care medicine who are looking at high-dose vitamin C, intravenous vitamin C, in septic patients. And they have shown some really interesting data to support the fact that patients survive longer if they're septic and you add vitamin C in certain patient populations.
So, what kind of patient populations? What do you mean by that? Are you talking about ethnic populations or?
No. Just certain types of septic shock patients.
Okay.
Who have infections and where they're septic, and there's been trials done, and I think they're advancing the trials to phase 2 and phase 3.
All right.
Looking at patients that are septic, and then they get vitamin C along with antibiotics and supportive measures.
Well, that's worth knowing, because of course antibiotics are becoming less and less useful over time, aren't they? So another weapon is well worth having.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so out with your crystal ball, looking to the future, can you see a time when patients are routinely given vitamin C alongside orthodox treatments in hospitals across the country? And if so, how far away would that be, do you think?
That would be kind of, I could see that happening if our studies continue to do this well.
Mm-hmm.
How long will that take?
Yeah.
I would say another 5 or 10 years, maybe.
Hmm.
I'm maybe being realistic and hopeful, but 5 to 10 years. It takes so long to get these studies done, and
doesn't it?
The data out and stuff. But I think if we keep progressing like we are, I would say 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. But in the meantime, given that this is in a completely different league to chemotherapy with its safety profile, is there a good reason for people who've got cancer now to be considering putting this alongside their treatment?
Well, I think it's too early to tell. I wouldn't discourage anybody from doing it, but I can't say from a scientific standpoint that in patients we haven't shown that yet. It's very encouraging results, but so, I can't say it yet.
No, obviously there's no guarantees it's going to help, but it's unlikely to harm. And
I agree.
So therefore, the worst you could do is spend a bit of money and get no extra help from it. But at the least, it's likely to help you get through your standard treatment.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. Okay, look, it's been really interesting. It's really exciting, the work you're doing over there, and we love hearing about it over here, as I say, where there's not a lot of this kind of action. It's great, and we hope that the effects of your work reach our shores as soon as possible, and we get a bit more recognition for you know, the fact that some treatments that are a little bit left field and don't look like normal pharmaceuticals do have some potential. So, yeah, very exciting indeed. And yeah, we just love the fact you're bringing credibility into this area.
Yeah, great. It was, yeah, if you have any more questions, don't hesitate to contact me. And
certainly won't. Thank you very much, Dr. Cullen. It's been really great to talk to you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Well, it does look as though finally high-dose intravenous vitamin C could just find its rightful place in treating cancer. I sincerely hope so. There are many practitioners who have absolutely no doubt of its merit in cancer through their own extensive clinical experience. Vitamin C promises to be what could be described as a quick and cheap win for any cancer service. Great to have you join me today. Please make a point of listening again next week. Goodbye. Thank you.